this great apartment complex is now going to be fully occupied, located as it is in Upper Harlem, a very key part of the inner core of New York. Also, I've been a co-sponsor of the Section State Housing Program, which New York receives about 200,000 limits a year, and through other amendments have made it possible to save a great deal of housing which would otherwise have been lost to us, to raise mortgage limits for multifamily apartment buildings, and to provide greater federal subsidies for state-insured housing projects like Mitchell Lama program. On the issue of health, I have done a number of very exciting things. One is to authorize hospitals which serve medically underserved areas. South Bronx is a very good example, where you don't have enough doctors or enough health personnel to allow those doctors to serve, and at the same time to allow the hospitals to be physically improved so that they can permit life safety codes and other standards which they're required to meet before they can get accreditation. Also, I've been responsible for the program which provided $30 million a year to make available the hospital clinics, because in many areas of the city there are not enough doctors. And so people who are normally ill and would normally have a doctor have no place to go if they don't have an emergency. But we're financing many of these hospitals so that they transform their service to include a clinic where there is today only an emergency receiver. Lastly, I've gotten some, through personal activity, to save some hospitals. Literally, a good example is Brooklyn Jewish, where we got certain formulas change in the Congress and now have assurance that that hospital can continue for a minimum of 3 years. Then there are various miscellaneous things. For example, I brought Hispanic youth into the Senate chamber as pages, notwithstanding that they were not as good on English as some of the other pages. I got changes made in the U.S. Navy recruiting so that they could give a break to Spanish-speaking and Puerto Rican personnel. In the food stamp program, that program has been kept intact for Puerto Rico, notwithstanding many efforts to break it. And it hasn't been broken, it's still functioning. And a great majority of the people of Puerto Rico are on food stamp. Mm-hmm. Those are samples of what I've done. And as to my opponents, the difference is twofold. One, my Republican opponent, Mr. D'Amato, has no experience in national government, whatever. And there will really be a terrible vacuum for New York that he sent to the Senate. He wouldn't know where to begin. That'll take him years to get his bearings. On the other hand, Ms. Holtzman is rather stiff and doctrinaire. Once she gets a position, it's practically impossible to shake her loose. And that is not the way of a legislature. You've got to have a certain feeling for what's going on, a sensitivity to it. Sometimes things are much more propitious in one house than in another. And Elizabeth Holtzman will not be able to follow that quickly. Also, she is not a very sympathetic character in the sense of making out deals, which are half the Senate's business. And I think she'll fall flat on that. She He's rather dogmatic and wants her own way. And I think it will be quite difficult to have her flexible enough to deal in the same. Now, those are some of the things. Mm-hmm. Also, I have a great sense of confidence in our Puerto Rican people. I think that given 10 years, 20 years, they will become an established part of the New York middle-class population. I don't find in them the hang-ups which you might find in other minority groups. They're perfectly open, like my parents who were immigrants, to accept the new society in which they live and to enjoy it and live in it very easily and comfortably. So I see many Puerto Ricans moving into the middle class who are now poor in the next 10 years.
I think I was a little clairvoyant when I asked that general question because it gave you an opportunity to touch on those bases. Incidentally, Senator, I don't think you made any observation about illegal aliens. What is your posture on that?
My posture on that is that when aliens who have entered into this country have been here for a given period of years, I think five is a fair period, there should be an amnesty. You can't have people here without, you know, and they're setting in roots and becoming a part of the community, and then suddenly throw them out. So I think an amnesty is required. Now, I believe that it should be a one-shot amnesty, 5 years, 7 years, because if you commit it on a permanent basis, then you're practically dismantling your immigration laws. I don't think we need to do that. So one, I would make it I would put it on a periodic level, without a specification of the time. Secondly, I think that we ought to have a concept of the skills which we require in this country and rate those very high because there are skills in this country we need very, very badly. And thirdly, I think that we always want an America contributed to by many strains, races, creeds, and ethnicities, and that therefore there has to be a minimal basis of that kind of entry into the United States. It is no pride to us that we have illegal aliens. It should rather be a pride to us that we have legal aliens who have come here and sought the way to come here because they think it's the best place on earth to live and which to raise children. And I don't give up on anybody in terms of being a good American citizen. There's no preliminary for that as to what country you come from, etc. It's available to people who love freedom and who are decent as human beings and who are compassionate as human beings and who want to learn, open-minded, wish to learn a new system of life and of government. But I think if we do this way, we will be better able to enforce our immigration laws.
Mm-hmm. Although you're a candidate on the Liberal Party ticket, you're endorsing Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan has recently indicated that he plans to appoint a woman on the Supreme Court. We have a black on the Supreme Court. Would you have any input, would you have a desire to have any input to designate a Hispanic on the Supreme Court?
Without any question. As a matter of fact, I think the time has come closer when a woman could be President of the United States, let alone a Supreme Court Justice. Mm-hmm. I might point out, too, that it is I who appointed the first pages in the United States Senate who are either black or Puerto Rican or girls. I opened all those three doors during my own tenure. So I'm very much persuaded that that is good. But I don't think anyone in the among the Hispanic groups would wish us to denigrate our standards and reach out, you know, to try. We got to have somebody that's Hispanic, because I think being a Supreme Court justice is as important a job as there is in this country, including the presidency. Therefore, I would continue to have my selection committee of lawyers of various economic incomes and various social standing to choose on the basis of excellence and character those whom I should nominate for the Supreme Court, for this very high job.
You touched on the South Bronx, Senator, and other areas, but the real project and the purpose of Jimmy Carter standing on Charlotte Street, which turned out to be really lip service, and then Ronald Reagan visited too. You think it augurs well for the South Bronx particularly, and I dare say for the rest of the urban blighted areas throughout the country, when and if Ronald Reagan is the president and you're returned to office, what would your role be with respect to that?
Well, my interest in the South Bronx very actively goes back to 68. When I campaigned up there and saw what had happened to the South Bronx, I put together an economic development corporation, which was headed, and Eddie will remind me of the fellow's name. I had a fellow named Patterson.
John Patterson.
Who was at the Bankers Trust Company up there, the local manager. And we began to try then. And we had a great plan set up for making the Mott Haven Railroad Yards an industrial park. And we worked with the city and we worked with the state. We needed $10 million to acquire those yards and we couldn't get it. But nonetheless, we persevered through the years and that organization still holds together, as a matter of fact. And that Hunts Point or Mott Haven, rather, industrial park is now being put together with an experimental building proposed to be put up there. So I believe that the way to redeem the South Bronx is with jobs. When people have jobs, you will get housing and you will get a stable community. When people don't have jobs, they tend to pick on each other and to drag the community down with them. And another thing that's needed up there, of course, is health care. There are no doctors, no health personnel. They've evacuated the area, just like most everybody else has. And I believe, therefore, that what I did about getting public health doctors into the area, and that's, by the way, it's being done up there, in order to supply medical personnel for areas where there is none, the doctors just can't afford to do it, is a critically important thing. Also, on federal aid to elementary and secondary education, I've gotten the special grants where there are concentrations of the poor, special anti-poverty grants, in the community or in the individual school. Also, I've gotten special grants where there's U.S. public housing in the area, what are called impact grants. And in those ways, I've tried, both personally by rallying a committee and in law, to make progress for the Spanish-speaking people who are there.
As a member of the Foreign Relations Committee, as a matter of fact, you're the minority
ranking
member, right? What's your position with respect to the Castro troops in Africa?
I think it's one of the worst things that's happened in terms of using hired hands for the Russians to do their bidding. And I think one of the first conditions we must impose, if there's any normalization relations between the U.S. and Cuba is the pullout of those troops. It's absolutely unacceptable to the United States. We just cannot tolerate its continuance. But I believe that the likelihood is better, probably, of getting those troops to pull out if Castro has some alternative, that is, some better relation with the United States. Now, at the end of 1974, matter of fact, at the end of September, Senator Pell of Rhode Island and I went to Cuba. Now, I ran that year, so I was running a big risk. And the Daily News said that I lost a lot of votes, about 250,000. But to me, it was worth it. In any case, when we went to Cuba that year, we really opened the door, which indicated there was tremendous friendship and interest for the United States in Cuba and among Cubans. And we had to give it an opportunity to catch hold and control what that government did. And I believe we did give it that opportunity, opening the door, which ultimately accommodated an anti-hijacking treaty and the return of hijackers and other freezing of, or rather, thawing of the freeze between the United States and Cuba. So I believe that withdrawing their troops from Cuba ought to be one of our very big points, and that from Africa, and that we should reiterate that constantly. We talked to Castro about it, and of course his argument was, well, why can't they back sister revolutionary regimes? Well, the answer is you're not backing them, you're taking them over. And we cannot indulge colonialism, whether it's Soviet colonialism or French, British, or other colonialism. That's an example of the way the world's going, and we cannot afford to accept the Cuban way.
As an expert in foreign relations, with the current conflict between Iraq and Iran, should there be a blockade or an embargo? What would be your position in terms of the oil problem?
If there was a blockade or an embargo, we would have to immediately invoke, it would be invoked on us anyhow, the sharing agreement with Europe, which would cut materially our own supplies and share our supplies with that of Europe and Israel, by the way. So I think that's a very important point. Secondly, we should not hasten to take military action, because right now we simply don't have the muscle that it takes. We don't have the military equipment, and we don't have the military organization. So that would be second. Third, I would, however, utilize our Navy and Air Force as far as we humanly can to neutralize the area and make trade from the area unprofitable. But I do not believe that we could walk away from such a crisis. It would just be too great and would cost us too much. So within the parameters that I've just described, I'd like to give that inventory of the things I feel I would be interested in transferring with the precautions which I've indicated.
The gentleman on my left, Senator, is David Dalver, our associate publisher.
Glad to see you.
Senator, how are you? Sorry I was late.
Thank you.
I had the computer down.
Okay, you came in at the very end, David.
Right.
The Senator, as usual, has been very forthcoming. We've raised quite a few questions, some general, some specific. Since you don't know some of the questions that were raised, is there anything on your mind at the moment?
I'd like to say something, if I may.
Sure.
Absolutely. I've said this for 20 years. It's been a little delayed, but I think it's coming around. I've said we will find the next middle class of New York among our Hispanic citizens, because there's really no reason why it shouldn't be so. My father came from Austro-Hungary. My mother came from what is now Israel. It was then Turkish Palestine. And they had, at least my mother said, the utmost passion for the education of her children. She herself never learned to read or write in English until she was 55. And she learned in a public, in an adult education course. And by the way, I've sponsored all the adult education bills, which are law, in Brooklyn. Our greatest pleasure when she learned, remember she was then close to 60, was to ride the subway, Brooklyn to New York, and read the advertising sign. She had a passion for education. Whatever she knew or didn't know, her children were going to be the best educated. And she worked herself to the bone. Very poor woman, my father. I see the same thing in our Hispanic citizens. And I believe it's going to come true, that will be the new middle class of New York, to replace a middle class which left here in the 50s and went out to the suburbs, at least the migration beginning. That, to me, is one of the most striking things about the Hispanic community. And I've always, tried to bring it to be true, and I'm still working that way. But I really think it's much closer than it was 10 years ago.
John, as a member of our board, if you have a question. How about you, Sam?
Oh, I find it all very interesting. I have no questions.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, I think the senator touched many, many bases. And you know, Senator, I don't have a question, but I have an announcement. And I think you'll find it a very pleasant announcement. I ought to give that pleasure to David Dowler, but I'll speak for you too, David. At our meeting this morning, in anticipation of your arrival today, it has been decided that Eliezer Lorenzo will endorse your candidacy.
Very encouraging.
The announcement will be made in a few days, so that we're not going to announce it publicly, but we wanted you to know.
That's very encouraging. Very encouraging, and I will value the opportunity to be of service. And the papers have been climbing all over me today about this ploy on the part of a couple of union leaders and Congresswoman Holtzman and Congressman Hottinger, theoretically to put me on the spot that I ought to withdraw in order to be sure that she wins. And my answer is, what's written in the heavens that she should win? She is far from being the best representative for the people of this state, and she's a very inflexible lady. And in view of the assets which the people of the state have given me, to wit, so much seniority, etc., I really have a duty to give them a chance to vote for me. So you can imagine how good I feel about your telling me what you have. I'll just tell my people here that, please, we don't want to use this in any way, shape, or form.
Until it's announced, yes. Okay, well, Liz Holtzman says that the state needs another Javits.
Well, you got the original.
That was the lead question.
Yeah.
I knew you were going to say that because I've watched your advertisements.
Got the original.
In any case, would you like to wrap up one more time?
Yes, yes, I would. Mainly, we need what private enterprise can do best, but we also need government with a heart. Got to have compassion. Respecting the vicissitudes of society. And one of the things that I did at the very end of the session was to construct the budget as an alternative to the budget which came out of the Senate Budget Committee. And it was very interesting to me for this reason. The budget figure was maintained at $613 billion. And and the defense figure, which is its most central element, that I had was exactly the figure adopted by the conferees after the House and Senate had both considered it, $153.7 billion. But by redistributing only $3 billion out of 613 to health and education and daycare and a few other things like that, only $3 billion, you gave the whole budget an appearance of generosity, of compassion, instead of its being, you know, tight and tough and the hardest on those who can afford it the least. Whether it was food stamps or, as I say, or daycare or youth training or keeping kids in school, that's all it amounted to. Well, and in addition, you know, they're not, they are feeling the crunch. They want.
They are so far away, so far removed from the poor level.
Right. But they have a heart, and if you can show them that it can be done and that it's not going to increase their burdens, I think they're generally very amenable to lending a hand. And I think we surely can. So, Harry, I thank you, and I thank your associates. And I thank Roy for his hospitality, and I'm very grateful for your assessment.
Thank you.
Very, very helpful. Extremely helpful.
I never had 45 minutes seem like 45 seconds ever.
Really?
That's been very fast.
Is that what we've been, 45 minutes? My God.
Okay, so thanks again.
Take care, Harry.
Great pleasure to see you. Many thanks. Thank you very much.
Discouraging, disheartening view.
It seems to me that my political experience, which say that should be heartening. I lost the Republican primary. I'm not on the ticket of either one of the big parties, and yet my strength has remained consistently high, which indicates that I have a very loyal and solid base of followers in the state. And Ms. Holtzman is not that far ahead. But in this mercurial time, she can't be overcome. I think she can. Lastly, I have 95% a recognition factor in this state, as much as the President of the United States. And I think the people will be convinced that I am best for them and will return, as far as I'm concerned.
This is
supporting me.
The mayor says he thinks you got a chance, Senator. He said even though he's been
ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for turning out. And I guess having lived in New York a long time, we know how to gather a crowd. I'm sure you'll agree with that. But, well, you shall have her. Mrs. Warner has most graciously told me when I was in Washington a few weeks ago that she would be very interested to see how we campaigned in New York. And I said, that's a deal. I'll be very interested in having you in New York. And so I suggested that our meeting should be here. And the Lord being willing and not having let it rain today, here we are. So I've asked Elizabeth Warner, if she'd like to say a word to you. And here she is, Elizabeth Taylor Warner.
Hi. I feel very honored and privileged to be here today to speak on behalf of a wonderful man, a man I have such admiration and respect for. He was the first senator I ever met in Washington. I went with a dear old friend, and I met Senator Javits. I took the 7 o'clock shuttle from New York, arrived at 8. We had breakfast together in the Senate dining room, and there was not a senator in that dining room that didn't stand up when Senator Javits walked by. I have, since being a senator's wife, watched him in the Senate, and every side of the aisle, Democrat, Republican, admires, respects, and loves him. And they listen to him. They take his advice. What he says is, after 24 years of experience, he knows what he is saying. There is experience and power behind his words. And we need that. God knows, in this day and age, we need a man of his integrity, of his experience, and of his honesty. Look what he has done for New York. Look what he has done for our nation. We need him. I ask you, I beg you, to put him back in the Senate where he belongs and where he is so badly needed, irregardless of who is president. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Elizabeth, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I won't detain you too long, but I would appreciate it if you stayed for about 10 minutes. My reason for running is that we're in a crunch time. Otherwise, there would be no reason for it. I've had all the honors that anybody could have, and I've had the job for 24 years. I've been your senator longer than any other senator in the history of the state of New York, in all of the over 200 years of our republic. But I felt that the dangers to our country, both at home and abroad, were so great that New York, having endowed me with unbelievable assets in the way of seniority and clout in the Senate of the United States, and the relationship with my colleague, which I am very grateful to Mrs. Warner for having described much better than if I did, results in my being able to deliver for the state of New York and for the people of our country. And it was for that reason that I felt motivated to offer myself to the people, and that I hope that the people will take the best asset that they have developed in a quarter of a century in the Senate and make that asset work for them. That is the privilege for which I ask you. And knowing New Yorkers as I do, you know how to split your tickets. And in order to find me on the ballot, you will probably have to split your ticket.